This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. Veteran director Woody Allen is having a good year. His most recent film, Midnight in Paris, is nominated for the Best Picture Oscar, and Allen's nominated for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay. Midnight in Paris tells the story of a writer, played by Owen Wilson, who comes to Paris with his fiancée and her parents, and he finds himself time-traveling to his favorite era, 1920s France. Every night when the clock strikes midnight, he meets famous writers and artists of the period, and on this night, he's introduced to a writer who happens to be one of his idols.
Now, this is a writer, Gil. Yes, Gil.
Gil Pender.
Gil Pender.
Hemingway.
Hemingway?
You liked my book.
Liked? I loved all your work.
Yes, it was a good book because it was an honest book. And that's what war does to men. And there's nothing fine and noble about dying in the mud, unless you die gracefully. And then it's not only noble, but brave.
Hemingway is played by Corey Stoll. Woody Allen has directed more than 40 films. He's been nominated for 17 Academy Awards and has won 3, including Best Writer and Best Director for Annie Hall. Terry spoke to Woody Allen in 2009 when his film Whatever Works was released. They began with a classic scene from Annie Hall.
There's an old joke. Two elderly women are at a Catskill Mountain resort, and one of them says, "Boy, the food at this place is really terrible." The other one says, "Yeah, I know, and such small portions." Well, that's essentially how I feel about life, full of loneliness and misery and suffering and unhappiness, and it's all over much too quickly.
Woody Allen, welcome to Fresh Air. You know, it's interesting how your characters try to find pleasure in a life full of pain. My impression of you is that you're the kind of person for whom pleasure is hard to come by, in part because you've said you're claustrophobic, agoraphobic. Annie Hall was originally going to be named anhedonia, which means an inability to experience pleasure. Is pleasure hard to come by, even when you're working to find it?
I do. There are a number of things that give me pleasure, but you know, hanging over the pleasure is always the dark cloud of you know, the human predicament, so that I can get pleasure when I'm playing with my children or I'm doing something with my wife or playing jazz. I like to play music, and I do find it pleasurable, but these are transient oases in a vast desert of unspeakable gloom, you know. But I do get pleasure. Like everyone else, it's pleasurable for me to go to a basketball game, or, you know, but always overriding it is the notion that it's you know, ephemeral, very, very ephemeral.
Now, you started in comedy by writing jokes, and you were writing for an older generation. What was the pay like? Did they pay you per joke or per joke that they used?
No, the pay was a lot. I mean, at the time, you know, when you think that my father and mother both had to work their whole life. My father drove a cab and was a bartender, was a bookmaker, and ran a pool room. My mother always worked in the flower market. And they had to combine their salaries. And I started working, and you know, their combined salaries would be, you know, maybe less than $100 a week combined. And I started working, and the immediately I was making close to $200 a week. I was 17 years old and I was making that. And before long, I was making $1,500 a week. And in those days, I mean, this was the early 50s.
That was a lot of money.
You know, the mid-50s. And it was more than my parents put together would make in ages. So the show business salaries, I always felt were way out of whack with reality. Now, I haven't made a big protest over that over the years, you'll notice. But I always did feel that they were, you know, when you see what a school teacher gets and what some terrible comedian gets or some awful singer gets, you know, it's shocking.
Did you say your father worked in a pool room and he was a bookmaker?
Yeah, my father had a lot of jobs. He was always scuffling to make a living. He sold jewelry. He was a waiter. He was a bartender. He was a cab driver. He ran a pool room. He was a bookmaker for a while.
You must have met a lot of colorful characters through him, unless you were not welcome in that world.
I was young to have met the colorful characters, but he was always bringing home stolen merchandise. And, you know, that was fenced to him for no money at all. So he'd always be coming home with, you know, a fur coat for my mother or a typewriter or a tape recorder or this, you know, and pick this up for $2 and this up for $20. And, you know, there was a lot of that over the years, a lot of stuff bought. I remember that. You know, fenced junk.
Were you supposed to keep that a secret, that it was fenced?
It was never expressed that way. It was, you know, it was that he came home with a bargain and,
right.
You know, that, and you say, my God, where did you get that, you know, electric typewriter for $1.25? It's brand new. And, you know, but you never knew that. And my father was an inveterate numbers player. There was not a day in his life that he didn't play the numbers, and whenever he won, you know, it was money for everybody. I mean, he just spread it around, you know, like Jackie Gleason and the Honeymooners. I mean, he just, everybody, you know, it was such a pleasure if he came home and had hit his number. You know, my sister and I and my mother all knew we were going to be rewarded with an extravagant bonus.
Can you describe the neighborhood you grew up in? A lot of people imagine you growing up under the roller coaster in Coney Island, like your character in
Annie
Hall.
Right. People think that. No, I grew up in a very nice section of Brooklyn called Flatbush. And when I grew up there, it was a lovely, you know, it was a lovely section. I mean, there was ball field and playground. There were many, many, many movie houses within, you know, walking distance of, no matter where you were dropped, you'd be within walking distance of a couple of movie houses. And the blocks were tree-lined and safe, and you could go out and play ball all day long in the streets and schoolyards. And it was a very nice neighborhood.
What was your parents' relationship like, and what did it make you think marriage was like?
Marriage for my parents was kind of like what it was in all the other neighboring houses and friends' houses. It was a long truce, is what it was. All the parents in the neighborhood, the men and women, they loved each other. There were people who were from the Depression, and so money was a big factor because nobody had any real money and everybody had to work. But usually what would happen is the men and the women would – the guys would work all day and they'd come home. And then on the weekends, the guys would take bridge chairs out and play cards at a table, and the women would keep with the women. There was no sense that a guy was coming home on the weekend so he could take his wife and, you know, leave the son with a babysitter or the daughter with a babysitter and check into a hotel and have a romantic weekend or do something romantic. There wasn't that. The guys would be, you know, watching the ball game, or not watching so much, listening on the radio to the ball games together. They'd be playing poker or gin rummy or pinochle together. And that's how it was even when there was a dinner or something. The uncles and relatives would get together. And as soon as the dinner was over, the guys would be in the other room around a card table. And the women would be talking in their room about, you know, and you didn't get a sense. You didn't come away with a sense of romantic passion. There wasn't much interpersonal charm to it.
I know that your movies aren't your life, but there's a scene in Annie Hall that is just like so funny, and I feel like I know these people. It's the dinner scene where you're at dinner with Diane Keaton, Annie Hall's family, and it's a much more kind of formal, you know, quiet, polite, everybody eating slowly kind of setting. And you compare that in your mind with the family dinners you were used to, where people are like shoveling down the food and hollering at each other and everybody's aggravated and talking about who has diabetes. Was dinner like that at home?
Dinner was not really like that at home, no, because, you know, I ate by myself at, 5:30, and my mother ate at 6:30 after she had made dinner for my sister and myself, and my father got home at 8:45, and he would have that stuff was made up and exaggerated for comic purposes.
How come you ate alone?
I ate alone because I like to eat alone, because I like, you know, I like the solitude. I like to, you know, eat and read a comic book or something. And
your parents let you do that without accusing you of being antisocial and turning your back on the family?
They were so happy that I wanted to eat alone. You know, no, because we always lived with aunts and uncles and things, and my mother would have a better time eating with her sister, or if my father got home in time and she was waiting for him, with him. But, you know, what am I going to talk about with my mother? I was 10 years old, or 9 or 11, and out in the streets all day playing stickball, and, you know, we had nothing to talk about.
Woody Allen speaking with Terry Gross. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're listening to Terry's interview with Woody Allen. His film Midnight in Paris is nominated for the Best Picture Oscar, and Allen's nominated for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay. They spoke in 2009, after his film Whatever Works was released. It starred Larry David as an eccentric New Yorker who meets a young girl from the South.
In the movie, Larry David is in his 50s, and Evan Rachel Wood is still in her teens when she shows up kind of homeless on his doorstep, and he decides, kind of against his will to and against his better judgment, to take her in and give her a few meals and then to let her live there, and then they get married. So forgive me for asking this, because this is a little personal, but this was written before, like long before you married Sun Yi, but it means, let's be honest, that everyone's going to be looking for clues in this movie about your relationship with your wife. And and again, let's be honest, a lot of your fans were really kind of upset when you married the woman who was the adoptive daughter of your longtime lover. So I wonder if you thought about that kind of thing when you were making the movie, that people would just be like looking for clues about the older man, younger woman relationship and how
people,
that applies to you.
People do look for clues in my movies all the time.
For who you
in
really
all my
are.
Movies.
Uh-huh.
The people always look for clues in my movies, and they think based on my movies that they know me. And of course they don't know me. And there are some things you could have learned about me over the years, but not much really. You know, I was never who anybody thought I was from when I started. When I first started as a comic in Greenwich Village, people thought that I was, at that time, some kind of a little beatnik and someone who, you know, was a kind of mousy intellectual. And, you know, none of these things were ever true. I never lived in the village. I always lived in a very nice neighborhood uptown in Manhattan. I was never intellectual. I was never interested in intellectual things. You know, when I explain to people, I'm the guy that you see in his T-shirt with a beer watching the baseball game at night at home on television, they find that hard to square with the characters that I've played in the movies. But in the movies, I'm just acting. But I've never been, you know, I was always a very athletic little boy, always, you know, never a loner or a loser, always the first one picked on any team.
You were the first one picked on any team?
Always.
See, I wouldn't have believed that.
I know. I was always
very
good athlete. I was interested even in playing professional baseball. I was, you know, won track medals. You know, but nobody thinks of me that way. They think of me as, you know, some kind of little bookworm, because I have these big black glasses, black rimmed glasses, and they think of me as a bookworm and give me more credit for intellect than I have. And, I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it through college. I couldn't make it through my freshman year of college. And this was not because I was some, artist or intellectual above it. I couldn't cut it. I mean, I wasn't.
You flunked out?
Couldn't get them. I flunked out. I was thrown out of New York University in my first year there.
What did you fail?
Because I couldn't get the marks.
In what subjects?
I was a motion picture production major. I had to take regular subjects as well.
Don't tell me you failed motion
English
picture classes.
And Spanish and subjects like that. I failed those subjects. And I didn't do well in motion picture production either.
Was this because you were busy writing jokes for other people?
I wasn't too busy. I was uninterested. I mean, I played ball. I was, as I say, I was athletic. I played cards. I liked to. I wasn't interested in erudition and education. Those are not things that I was not brought up to be interested in that, and I wasn't interested. I didn't see it in my home, and this is long winded, but just to say that people have. Are constantly looking for clues to me in my work and seizing on things that are quite, quite unrepresentative of who I really am.
When people love somebody's art, they become very interested in the artist, and that leads them to be interested in the artist's personal life or what they can find out about it. And like some of your fans felt just upset and in some ways even betrayed maybe because of your marriage to Sun Yi, and they started reevaluating, well, do I see his films differently now? I think a lot of people went back and rewatched Manhattan or thought about Manhattan because it's the story of an older man and a younger woman, a middle-aged man and a teenager. Do you think it's fair or wrong to to evaluate an artist's work by decisions they've made or what you think of decisions they've made in their personal life? Or do you think that that's...
I think you can evaluate an artist any way you choose to. You're free to evaluate an artist in any way that you want to, based on anything that makes you happy.
And do you care what people think of your personal life? Or is that just irrelevant to you?
Well, do you care? If I say I don't care, it sounds so cold and callous. But let me put it this way. How could you go through life, taking direction from the outside world? I mean, what kind of life would you have, if you made your decisions based on, the outside world and not what your inner dictates told you? You would have a very inauthentic life.
So you told us you didn't eat with your family. Do you eat when you were growing up that you ate alone because you liked to be alone with your comic book at dinner?
Yeah.
And your parents preferred the company of adults. Do you eat with your children now?
I eat with the children, yeah, but because they like our company, and the generations are different. I'm much closer to my children than my parents were to me. My kids and I... and my wife, talk about the same subjects, and we're all friends. Now I'm an older parent, but I'm still a parent in a younger generation than the generation that I grew up in. Obviously, I do eat with my children, and we like it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Woody Allen speaking with Terry Gross in 2009. Allen's film Midnight in Paris is nominated for the Best Picture Oscar, and Allen's nominated for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay. Here's Sidney Bechet from the soundtrack of the film. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.